Welcome to a very special episode of Tactical Crouch. This is episode 338. This will be the script reading episode. I know, yes, we have magically changed. This is not an April Fool's joke. We are going to be reading, both Yiska and I, we're going to be actively reading for the newest arm of the new Law & Order universe. This is where we're both going to be reading lawyer parts for the new Law & Order EXO unit. I will be reading for the part of John Munch. Yiska, who will you be? What part will you be reading for?
Suck on my dick, maybe. I don't know, man. You're putting me on the spot. You're now forcing my filter to let one through. Okay.
Well, not the first 2 seconds. All right. Well, yes. Well, YouTube, here we are.
Be gracious. YouTube. With us. It's a name.
Please. It is.
It was on Colbert. Okay. That's where I got it from.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
it's corporate America. 2010.
Okay. Yes. Well, jokes on us. April Fools. We're still talking about Overwatch. The biggest news of the recent weeks being the big rule debate. The big kerfuffle with EXO and apparently Twisted Minds and their acquisition of certain players and why that is not being allowed by the administration. That's basically the big debate today, akin to a script read. I will be presenting Yiska with as many unfair, generalized questions to try to set the record straight as to what's actually going on here. Who's kind of in the right, who's kind of in the wrong, and what are these rules signaling to the general populace, the people of the great Overwatch community? Why do we have these rules?
Can I address the great Overwatch community directly?
Go for it.
Gentle folks of the Overwatch community, by the time this podcast is done, I will have presented some clarifications on the issue. And the two issues and how they're separate in the quality of the charges that teams may bring forth. I will discuss the over WCS rules at large, who, small spoiler, I think are a step change from Overwatch League rules. I think the most interesting discussion will be around the implications of the rules, the spirit of the rules, and what is implied with what both third-party tournament organizers and, to a certain degree, also Blizzard want for this esports to be, and in which direction they want this to be guided, as implied by the rules and the rule applications. And then, I'm going to juice it a little for you guys. There's another one coming down the pipe. Pike. Pipe 2, because
pipe.
That's a crack pipe.
Just don't play with it, though.
There is, it might never come to fruition, but there's one thing in the rules that is very counterintuitive. It doesn't matter right now, and it's also a thing where I would have to say, I think the circuit point rule issue is a little overrated as right now for stage 2. By stage 3, it will matter a lot. Right. Okay, so that's basically like the coverage of topics. It will be a little bit nudge, let's be honest, right? Like, this is where we're charging our litigious spirits into the ether, right? And trying to make sense of this. I think there are reasons why all stakeholders involved can be upset. I think the clearest clown here is, in my opinion, the admin that gave the wrong information. That guy is of the chain, right? That should never happen. But otherwise, we'll discuss like where there's some rules in place, where the spirit of the rule makes sense, what the spirit of the rule may suggest as to the values, and have some discussion and clarification around it. Because let's be honest, this is super dry, and I think there have been some strategical diversions as to the topic of the rules,
strategies, psyops.
There was some interesting choices to be made in how this was argued. I think even the admins biting on that did themselves no service, uh, no like didn't okay, serve themselves or represent themselves well, because there's one rule that just like kills the argument. It's a smoking gun. It's over. Okay.
We have hard unloading and past infinite.
I'm bias boosting, bias maxing from the get go before we get into the objective.
But are you mewing though? Are you mewing while you're bias maxing?
I was so early on mewing. I knew everything about mewing before it became cool. Okay. Base. I knew there's a Dr. Mew. I knew about the subreddits. That's just about like legitimately like 8-9 out of 10 attractive people having like body dysmorphia and trying to get to the 10-10. That's by mewing and like saying their face was disfigured by it. I don't think it ultimately has much scientific background behind it anyway. So, but it's fun. Therefore, it's fun. Looks maxing is fucking hilarious.
Oh man, these were going to be our jury members for the case of XO and TM versus the public, but today they will be the admins of the FaceMax Discord and Reddit. Yes, that's true. We are co-sponsored, title sponsored by Battle Crab, Refund, Bean, Bronze, Bob, Buhal, Alshin, Rexane, Volumelon, Sugar Hire, and our YouTube members. I am DRW, Brother Adam L, Ice MGL, Fireman 6, and AK. Yiska is bringing...
Wait, give me a sec. Is the new guy in? Did you add the new guy, Joe?
We didn't, but I will specifically shout them out. Do you have their name? My messages, I deleted.
I could. Give me a second. You're getting a special one, my guy. Wait, give me a sec. Where was it? How far away was this? Did I get a Twitter DM or a Timpact? I think it's Timpact.
Okay, there you go, Timpact.
If that's not the nickname you wanted to be called by, I'm sorry, but like what do I have right now? Okay, and it's a cool name.
Let us know,
because it's a.
This is true.
Timpact, kind of smart, you know.
Smart. All right, we have some biases to go through. I have collected a crack team to scour the Twitterverse to synthesize down the most general questions, to pose the most unfair interpretations of things, so that you, the public, can hopefully either resonate with some of these questions and then have Yiska dismantle them, or spawn a debate on what could be better about these things. I feel like that's ultimately the end all be all with the rules lawyers Discord channel in the community Discord. If you're not there, come on over. There's a link somewhere. And if you don't have one, I'll find one for you. So first thing on the docket, Yiska, in the case of XO and TM versus the public, did the OWCS admins, quote unquote, change the ruling to disable their players to come on over?
Okay, so here we get into my some might not know this about me, but I'm a failed law student. I had, I believe, 2 years in law school. And here we have to define what rule changes may entail. Now, no active rules were changed in the rulebook whatsoever. Okay.
Okay.
The dispute is that an admin, which I've already clarified as a clown, did not interpret the rules correctly as to what they mean in effect for Korean players that had already played in stage one of APAC being able to join stage two of EMEA or NA. Now, keep in mind, it works differently in OWCS, EMEA, and Korea. Right. So the difference being also probably because of, you know, completely different setups, like WDG has like an offline studio and like they have a lot of players that are local and like you just want to show more. You want to give them the viewers a little bit more at the location and you have a deeper talent pool. It just makes sense to have a more rigorous process for that. I would argue you can be against that. There's certainly some issues arising from the unalignment of these systems. Because what happens is, for the entirety of stage 1 and 2 in EMEA and NA, Korea will still be on stage 1, and they will indeed only have two stages this year. Now, only the one stage qualifies for Dallas, right, for Korea, which is the first major. But both stages combined in aggregate via the circuit points and via winning the respective local regional competition will qualify for Dallas. Okay. So that has caused for teams to run into the situation where, for instance, Runaway right now is already out of the competition.
Yep.
Therefore, the players have a huge hole in their calendar now, right?
Yep.
We're not sure how Koreans will qualify for EWC, right? Now, the important part also is that currently there's an active roster lock until after Dallas imposed on Korea, okay? This is defined as by the official rules. Here, the official rules delineate or have a little bit of a difference in terms of like how the roster rules are defined. The EMEA rules frame it negatively in the sense that they say there's a roster lock, and the OWCS Korea or Asia rules say there's a roster signing window, effectively the same, okay? So there's currently no active roster signing window in Korea. So therefore, a player like Mac could not be joining any other OWCS Korea or any other OWCS Asia roster.
Right, which, because of the roster lock.
Because of the roster lock, and I would argue, here we get into the spirit of the rule, it would be kind of lame to resummon this decay situation, right?
Sure.
If people recall. It was a little bit different because, like, you could argue that justice abused, to a degree, the spirit of the rule that was in place at the time, replaced decay with one of the substitutes rules, and was able to get them in because instead of Lulzish, right? And therefore, like, dominating the blah, blah, blah. That's not the important part. But the important part is, I think there is reason to protect the competitive integrity of not forming super teams, especially, let's first talk about Asia, once teams are out. If you can just, like, collect the Oxodia of all the teams that are out, as soon as they are out, that would, in my opinion, not make for great entertainment, and that's something that should be discouraged. Now, keep in mind that for EMEA and NA, they are also still in the qualifying period for Dallas. Right?
Correct. Yeah.
So, there, I'm open to have a discussion whether or not the spirit of the rule here is okay. Right? Because the spirit of the rule would be, okay, at least, you know, the players from those teams can now, you know, fill some slots elsewhere and, like, not sit around. I think there is a discussion to be had around the problems of, like, long pauses for these teams in Korea, which Rush raised. But really, the subject is like, should Korean players be allowed in those situations to play stage two, which is by and large the only stage that matters. Stage one almost does not matter in terms of like how the point distribution works in how they qualify, just because like stage two is twice the points of stage one. Okay,
right.
And the difference between first and second place and second place and third place are 100 points. Per team, okay? So 20 points per player, therefore 100 points per team. That's substantial. That's already, like, I believe the points that the second place... Let me not lie. No, it's... whatever. But it's not... Like, that difference gets rid of a lot of the problems with points. And I think for that reason, the circuit points are also not a big problem. But... Here we get into the argument of EXO, right? I guess I should probably stop here and just say, like, yeah, the disagreement here is around whether or not a player like Mac, there was a rumor around Kellen, and a rumor around another player, if they should be able to be picked up by EMEA teams for stage two. And then there was a rule dispute. I argue there are three different rules that pertain here. And, of course, both teams made the argument for the strongest rule with the most ambiguity. As I will argue, I don't think that matters such at all, given the other, especially the one other rule.
Mm-hmm. So a brief summary of a lot of those points, and then I kind of want to follow up on a couple threads there, right? So to the question of did the admins change the rules, Yiska?
No.
You're saying they're not the father.
They did not change the rules. There was only a false interpretation of the rules handed out to teams by...
A clown admin.
By a clown rogue, like a rogue contractee. Contracted admin that should have never communicated that, and okay. The OWCS, I'm not sure if you would call him leadership, but the ESL Faceit representative, I think he's the producer or product manager, has said as much that was a mistake to as happened.
So then I think the natural follow-up there is the admin gave wrong information. That's fair. Then I feel like the logical next conclusion is, if not the admin, then was there anybody they could contact?
Well, yes. I think, like, realistically, I wonder why you would even contract, like, the back or, like, the lowest guy in that organization, rather than, going to, in my experience, at least how they present to the community. I actually haven't contacted them directly yet, but to relatively approachable folks, both at Blizzard and at EFG, regarding the question, right? They should know. And I, if I'm making what I presume to be several thousand dollars of investments, would like to have the reassurance of the highest guy I can contact, right?
Yeah.
And that, to my knowledge, did not take place. They did not contact Bailey. They did not contact, I think his name is Omar on Discord, and did not ask clarification from the highest order. Now, I would argue, still, if someone presents themselves as an admin and nobody has corrected that position in... Mm-hmm. OWCS official channels, I think to a degree that is a problem for the organization and should be taken responsibility of. I'm not saying this would change the ruling, but I think...
It would stop it from happening again, hopefully.
Yeah, there's some liability here. I'm not sure if it would ever get to the point of, covering some of the costs. I don't think that's legally enforceable, but I certainly understand the emotional charge behind the issue, given that piece of information, for sure. More so for Twisted Minds, who directly contacted that guy and talked to him, than EXO, who I think from their public communication at least, did not directly talk to someone. And I think, arguably, if you double-check this, someone else asks someone else, and then it's 2-for-2. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, if it's 2-for-2, you have an absolute case. And, like, I think at that point, you should be reimbursed. The rule should not be overruled. I think it's a good rule for the time being. And you don't want to change rules on the fly as they are broken. But there could potentially be some grounds for liability, even though, like, even in cases, in Overwatch League cases, there was never ever anything given in that regards, right? But yeah, I think a double checking is probably
best practice, right?
Yeah, best practice. I don't want to necessarily say like asking the lower guy and hoping for him to low the least and being able to push that through him is a viable strategy, but like it definitely wards you from people making that accusation. Let's say that
100%, right? And again, that there's a lot. That was a very information dense little chunk there. So let's just quickly unpack that. So with an unbiased lens here, the timeline goes from at least the public's perspective. EXO asks TM, who has been in contact with some Korean players, has asked the admins if they can sign said Korean players. The admin says yes. EXO is then in contact with Team.
That's a wild decision where the admin has to fail to recognize at least three rules.
Correct.
And see that there's one, like just because one of them is ambiguous does not mean it cancels out the other two rules, right?
I mean, I think the obvious one is that there is a roster lock and no roster transfers can happen, correct? Like that is the most obvious blaring smoking gun evidence here.
Yes.
Nothing can happen with Korean players as it stands currently. There is a roster lock in place. This admin has utterly just dropped the ball in so many ways. However, quickly recapping. So EXO is in contact with TM, who is in contact with Korean players and an admin. The admin fails, says that TM can sign Korean players. TM then tells EXO, hey, you should be able to sign Korean players too. They get in contact with Korean players, them being EXO, and OWCS gets involved and says, you can't do that. There are rules. Here are the rules.
Correct.
Who's to blame, right?
And by that time, I'm not sure if the flights have already happened or if they only have been paid or what the status quo is here, but they're obviously very, very far along having transferred money.
Right?
Like this is definitely like a... And keep in mind, there's also reason for them to do this because the impending roster deadline on the 5th, I believe it is, is also forcing them to come up with a solution. And that, like, it's not just like they try to press it through. So in order to steelman this, yes, there was a lot of timely pressure for these organizations to get a solution going right now. But, I think that you probably, because it's so vital that this succeeds, and you have time to shop around for different solutions if they say no, I think there's grounds to say you should have probably signed that up with the head honchos and be extra sure.
Fair. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, to explore more of the rules of, you know, obviously Korea, from my understanding of your explanation, Korea specifically is under a roster lock until after Dallas. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So to play within a hypothetical for a second, is there a possibility for EXO and TM to sign other non-Korean players?
They can even sign Korean players had they not played in Stage 1.
Okay.
One of those guys, for instance, I think to the best of my knowledge, is Fearless. I think Fearless has not participated in Stage 1 of Korea. Also, interestingly, and this is something that I did not like when ExOblivione did this, Spectra is eligible by the rules outlined. Now, you know, viewers that look at Spectra's Liquipedia will go, wait, wasn't he on Poker Face? Now, there's two things that are important here. One, he did not play on Poker Face, to the best of my knowledge. He did not play a single match. Okay. Secondly, he was transferred during the roster change window. So therefore, like his roster or his transfer to M80 was legitimate as well. So there's no problem with Spectra, as far as I can see. Now, had he been in the qualifiers, there is probably something more to be said. And there, the rule that they're actually disputing, in terms of like the actual rule dispute that EXO mentions in there, and TM also feels as like the ambiguity between teams and players in the verbiage of the rules. That might actually become an issue, but if Spectra has not played a single match, I don't think just like that would count towards activating that rule. Also because I think he left before the active season even started.
Okay.
And so keep in mind, what does it even mean to be on a team in Overwatch Esports at this time if there's no contract?
Sure, yeah. Right. 100%. Yeah, you're just like it's a verbal handshake agreement that, you know, I will sign up on Face It with you. That's to be, you know, that's it. Now that we've kind of established that rough timeline, we've kind of tackled one of the big, you know, public talking points is that the admin, you know, Blizzard changed the rules on the teams last minute and it's bad guy Blizzard. And I'm not going to be the one to sit here and defend Blizzard, but I feel like a unbiased perspective here is probably the most accurate one. We've outlined a few different rules as to why this couldn't have happened. I'm going to ask you an opinion, your opinion on the matter. now that we've kind of at least gotten a general idea as to what has happened, do you feel like TM and XO should be reimbursed by Blizzard?
It's really hard to make that. I don't think so. From a legal, like, this trumps like all official rulings in terms of legality, right? Like, this is not, we're now in the realm of actual law, not just, you know, funny esports like made up rules, sure. Right? And that is a question I do not have, like, do not feel confident in answering, also because of the different jurisdictions that might be involved here, right? Like,
sure,
where the law might apply. I think there could be something considered as to be a bone thrown, maybe like an extension of the roster signing window for them specifically, something like that. Just because it's crucial to say, like, I think that's the Blizzard guy, said, at least that's from the EXO document, right?
I remember there was a screenshot where a person by the name of Trevor, the username does look familiar, did kind of post in what looked to be an official Discord, like a clarification of the rules that, you know,
yeah,
spelling it out pretty clearly, you can't do this.
Further down, Eric. The rule for the audio listener says, so the official ruling, and then Trevor says, to be clear, while a miscommunication did occur, it's important, right? So they take not responsibility, but they acknowledge it, that it happened. We will not be altering how we are ruling this. Your team is not approved to bring Mag and any other player who participated in OWCS Asia. This includes, to be clear, the qualifiers for Asia main event, like OWCS Korea, to participate in stage 2 of NA or EMEA. That was another dispute that people had, where like they were like, well, OWCS Korea, is that really like a qualifying event for that's of the like of EMEA, because you still have to go through the proxy of the Asia qualifiers first. But that Alberting, okay, you're not slick. You might have been an assist, could have gotten an assistant general manager slot, but it's very obviously with Albert. I think he would have taken you on as an apprentice. It's solid Alberting instinct, but it would have probably not constituted enough to really challenge that here, because I think that's implicit that, you know, OWCS Korea, Asia, and the other Asian regions are part of the real deal. Yes, you could argue that there should be some more clarity within the rules as to define it. They did it here in the clarification, right? What all constitutes that to be a part of, but yeah, I think also just from the spirit of the rule, it probably makes some sense.
Fair. I mean, I think when it comes to the, I understand where you're coming from. You're talking from a legal perspective. I'll give my opinion on the matter, just because I think there is room. TM probably, in my opinion, has the best case to argue with Blizzard to say, right, hey, look, your paid position person, point of contact, however you want to clarify, admin, whatever, gave us the wrong information and we operated within that. We understand that there was a misinterpretation. How can we make this right without breaking the rules, right? I think that that's a fair discussion for TM and Blizzard and maybe even FaZe to have, right? However, if I'm to understand the timeline of events correctly, I don't think EXO has any legs to stand on whatsoever. And frankly, it's a little bit much to see a full Dunzo manifesto style, you know, court case filing by a team who, from my understanding, and I will feign ignorance if I'm wrong, talk to another team to clarify a rule. That, I think, is a gigantic red flag.
Yeah, I think that's not doing proper due diligence then, right?
Not at all, no. Like, I'm sorry, that's not.
I would say that every team should have read the rules in totality. Every team should have raised...
Any email readers?
No? Should have raised concerns in regards to the spirits of the rule and the extent of the rules prior to the season.
Yeah.
The reason they are released prior to the season is in order to be able to crowdsource feedback and make things right before things get going. As far as I'm concerned, or as far as I know, there were very few amendments and considerations and rewordings being forwarded as to I infer as much, given there was only like an update later, which yeah, they had some volume in that, but I don't think that was necessarily like brought forth by teams as much as I would have liked it to see.
Okay.
I think the other thing is like, yes, like if you read these documents, and if you, by the way, you're importing players from OWCS Asia, you should probably also read the Asian rulebook. That might be relevant towards your
Pin that. Sorry. I think that's a natural follow up, but continue. Pin that one though.
Yeah, and then like as you strategize around those rules, because it's also part of your job to strategize just around those rules, and you will find that a lot of good general managers got a lot of value out of extending the rules. Talked about couple of cases, right? Like we talked about Albert, we talked about priest justice. Situation. Even though I would argue they should have never been allowed to do that, but that's a different story.
I'll document it.
It is, I think, to be fair, as a competitor, I think I want to also stretch as much as possible in terms of the wording of the rule.
Yeah.
And I want to Albert it as much as possible, which is why, like, once again, like if we're talking about responsibilities, the lion's share is on that guy. That I understand the rule or the guy or the position that the guy was in and how he represented it, OWCS as a person there. Now, I could be convinced that this is not true. Maybe he was just like some obscure guy with a blue name in a Discord, in which case I think that's then also a little different. But from what we've heard, there is an issue with someone that has some authority giving the wrong information. Now, I understand how that issue happens, right? Like, you read one rule, you see this ambiguity, and to be fair, Exo pointed it out, right? So they called out the phrase, teams will be limited to compete in only one region, okay?
Yep.
It does not say players will be limited to compete in only one region, okay?
Yeah.
Now, just because one rule says something cannot work does not mean that this means part whole, right? Like, Korean players that played in OWCS Asia are allowed to play in OWCS EMEA under conditions that are further limited by other rules. So, of course, you would have to shed the entire document as to see, like, one rule, unless it clearly states, disregard all other rules. I'm the god rules, like, god king of rules. Yes, you can. Okay.
Skip your turn. Draw a card. You can sign Korean players. Yeah, that's the rule that we're looking for.
Of course, all the other rules have to be considered as well. And it's like, it's Reddit moderator Andy level to not see the problem with various other rules within both rule sets of OWCS Asia.
I feel like you're witch hunting.
And EMEA.
We're gonna have to close this thread.
Yeah, I think, look, we're contributing to a wider societal problem of this having...
Are we, though?
Having, like, created 7 or 8 offspring, like, Reddit threads where everyone just put their own opinion in, and like it got progressively like, I don't know, like
wilder. I think
it got wilder. I will say, like, Chris went a little harder than I think their energy necessarily warranted. I agree the how they displayed the issue and how they like packed Spectra into the entire thing, even though he's not at all
concerned. He's completely fine to be signed.
You know,
from
like,
my understanding,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like it's it, that you had a dude, like you had a bit of goodwill with me after your announcement with EWC, which I understand because you wanted to protect your players and your fans.
Yes, that's so well said. Yeah,
and based. Then like you try to too quickly cash in on my brownie points. And then you overdrew your hand a little bit. Like, if you just came out and said, look, we understand there are rule ambiguities. Like, we don't have law degrees. We just asked the guy, and then the guy said, like, you can.
Well, no, whoa, 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 whoa. In their case, they asked their peers who asked the guy, correct?
Right. Yeah. I mean,
that's how I'm it's sorry. Presented. That's a little. Rough.
Yeah, that's different. But, like, okay, look. It's so easy to get an optics win here. Another one, okay? X optics, okay? X optics Blivione? I don't know. I love optics. I don't know. Just don't say answer. we did not fully get after our personal duties. We acknowledge as much, but there's a dude that told us that told other competitors we could. We're competing against these guys. We yeah. get wind of it. Of course, we're going to exploit the same rule ambiguity that everyone else is exploiting.
Correct.
And that I can understand if you phrased it that way. To throw everything in terms of like Spectra as well. Like you can still play Spectra. It's probably a good upgrade. Go, right? And I even, once again, I also have like sympathy because Gunba took your team and shot it behind the barn as well, right? Like with mm-hmm. taking your tank. Like you have all the good power, like the good brownie points with me, then you have a guy that is probably salty because you beat them in the bracket coming at you. Everything, like, you should not be losing this optics war. Somewhere along the chain of argument, you lost the optics war by being objectively wrong. And that's a problem, right? Like, you didn't need to
yeah.
extend yourself. Everyone gets that you... that it hurts for an organization as small and that's already not going to cash in on the big fat EWC prize pool and has to somehow finance itself, that this, like, committing that much resources to signing a player like Mag is an extension or possibly an overextension just because you do not want to, like, concede that you cannot be competitive in against other sponsored teams that are probably also taking the money from EWC, right? Dude, you're basically the knight riding in on a shining armor. You just got to ride that shit home and let the peons discuss it among themselves, right? Like, you do not have to do much. But
is this not just like completely like Streisand affecting the entire situation? Like they could have just been like, oh, dang, like we got shit. Forget about it.
Yeah,
bringing such a big spotlight to this, I feel like, again, like you said, has made it just look worse.
If I'm already buddy-buddy enough with TM to know who they're signing, I can also probably be buddy-buddy enough to wait for them to do the announcement and go, are we also fucked?
Well, fair, but how to put it, like a more charitable interpretation of that, like you kind of already outlined, if we're supposed to be competing with these people, but we're also a little buddy-buddy, dagger behind the back, like, should we not be in that arms race as well? Should we not be going after these players and trying to move a little bit faster than the rules can, you know?
I'm purely talking about the optics angle, right? Like, just let TM release the information first. They have a more of a case. Folks will probably not even look as much. You can just say,
we just
saw like TM was doing it. We assumed they had like gotten the go ahead. We even talked about it. We even maybe saw the DM that they got from the admin because we're so close with them. We scrim them a lot, blah, blah,
sure.
blah.
Yeah.
And we assumed, and we're like a humble organization that's mostly like co-owned by two guys. Like, brother, this is a home run optics wise, right? Like,
fair.
You do not have to be like trying to impress the super professional image of you having like nerged over the rules and found the fucking loophole, like to get a win here, right? Like,
I feel like that's the ultimate like failing of this, like this race to get the information out, is that there's multiple rules that just kind of negate any kind of argument that they would have had. So, like, how nerds did you really get? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, how deep did you really go when there's other, like, subsections that just cancel out anything you're trying to do?
And look, like, you're not the only one. I know my motherfucking GMs. These fuckers, even in the Overwatch League, didn't read shit other than Albert. And that's why they were able to get these, like, advantages. There were very few GMs that were very rules-heavy. Like, I would probably say I think there were some coaches that were rules heavy. Angamba is certainly among them, even though he kind of fucked up with the circuit points this time around. Then again, he didn't, because I feel like they are not a big deal right now. Do I know anyone else where I felt like...
We know Flame wasn't.
Yeah.
We know Boston. Huck wasn't.
Huck was actually... Yeah, no, Huck...
Well, could he have been...
Yeah, I know that one. That one thing. I think after that, he probably became much more...
I wise up, too. I fucking sure as shit wise up when I'm trying to play my rookie main tank, and then I end up giving the first win to the Shanghai Dragons. Yeah, I'd probably get a little butt hurt, too.
No fair. But, like, yeah, I think it's a boring part of the circuit, of the argument. Let's also be honest, like...
Sure.
There are people that are worse at roles, and most of them were doing them for the Overwatch League last year. Where,
fair,
like, dude, we had two active fucking, you know, like, it was like clone sheep Dolly, okay? Like, two slightly different versions of the same rule set in active play, and we're just making, like, we're deciding which sheep to have for, I don't know, Thanksgiving, just based on a random coin toss. Basically, I don't know if you know anything. Okay, the fucking equivalent, like the fucking metaphor only works if you know who Clone Sheep Dolly is and you were alive in 1999, okay? Which is, I think, when it happened. I don't know. But
really? Was Dolly 99?
I don't know. That's
whatever.
That's when I felt like maybe I get cloned and I was still in school. I don't know. So.
Okay.
You don't know, dude.
Weird.
Maybe, I mean, can you say for sure that there are not five Joes that are getting replaced every time you're
jaywalking? I sure as
jaywalking?
Fucking hope not.
Yeah, well, don't know.
Felony jaywalkers in the chat, hello? Chat, he's jaywalking.
Now, okay, so, like, once again, there's the rule argument, there's the optics argument, which I hate to have, but I think you gotta in this day and age. Because it also enacts policy in some way.
Yeah.
And you got to have like the spirit of the rule argument, right? Which I think is fair and I think is way underserved in, you know, what we're actually trying to get at.
Agreed. Now, before we dive into like the specific rules and what they're actually like trying to enforce in the macro sense, I wanted to kind of get your take on one specific thing. You talked about how the Asian and Korean rule book is a little bit different than it is in NA and EU. We've also seen the format change in Korea differ. You know, there are obviously some like big glaring differences that have recently been changed with the formatting of how the sets are being played in Korea. Does any of this get accentuated by how different the two regions are?
Yes.
Does that help situation?
It exacerbates the issue, right?
Because, right.
Like, if Korea finished its first stage as well, then there would be no problem, right? They would also not be in a roster lock. They would also have the same stipulations as, like, it would not impact how qualification for Dallas is played any more than in the other regions. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the argument is like the active competition would be impacted if transfers were possible. Right. That's the issue that you're trying to shut down. That's basically the problem. And given that it's one fat stage and they're currently playing, that's the problem. Right. Now, I sympathize with the idea that it is kind of sucky teams that went out at the earliest or second earliest convenience, like Runaway, that they now have to sit there and basically like hope they have some chance to qualify for EWC, and if not, they're probably sitting there until like stage 3, which is months out. Okay,
August.
It's August, right? So,
yeah.
But this leads to a larger... This, look, no, okay? People need to get off this. In practice, it is the case, but this is no longer the Overwatch League.
Okay? Yep.
It's not,
preach, brother.
It is not designed to be the only game in town. It is designed as an open system, and to say that there is a hole in the calendar is not technically the responsibility of the OWCS in particular, right? It is in part the responsibility of Blizzard, who wants to have an active, you know, player base, but it's not anyone else's problem within that system. There could be, very well, the other tournament organizers, okay?
The elusive other man.
Dude, like, this week, Starletter announced a full circuit in 2025 and 2026 for CS, and PGL, that just hosted a major in 2020. Dude, CS has 2 4-week breaks, otherwise they're playing every weekend, and the 1 4-week break in 2025 is during the yet-unannounced Esports World Cup for that time. So they're presumably also playing during that. Otherwise, they have a like 44-week coverage of CS based on 4 different tournament organizers that are currently participating, which is EFG, which is Blast, which is PGL, and which is Starletter. There's 4 in the EMEA region that could be hosting these tournaments, and they fucking aren't because this esports is not there yet. Or there maybe will never be. Okay.
Could possibly be, yeah. Who knows?
It is, once again, like a lot of these issues come down to we do not have the resources to fix it. Okay?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 100%.
Could they be reimbursing the teams that are, if they had resources, we could fix it, right? Could there be different tournaments where that would sting significantly less? We had more money, we could fix it.
Yep.
If the price pool for Dallas was actually very healthy, then they could feasibly, you know, make a bid for someone like Fearless and fix their hole if they were so inclined as to, you know, fix their tank position. And that's a guy that is unblocked. If there was money, we could fix it, right? Yep. You will frequently in the system, and you will have to choose the lesser evil of 2 bad choices. Okay, that's the constant situation that this esport is in, right? We're having coaches on welfare. We got to wisen up to the realities that come with those circumstances, right? And a lot of the time, the answer is we cannot make it right by people because this esports has...
There's just no... Again,
30K.
We would if we could.
Right.
100%, right? Like, anybody who is still, like... salivating over the death of the Overwatch League that isn't just like an unabashed like anti of the idea of Overwatch esports, just a gigantic hater, and just was propagating this rhetoric of, well, if the Overwatch League just dies, then the third party tournament surely will come.
Brother, that was such cope.
What anybody that was talking about Alienware monthly melees and reminiscing of the actual, like, not rose tinted glasses, but like Hubble literally is made of rose gold. We're looking into the brown eye of the universe and it shat in our face. Okay. Again, it's the elusive man, the mysterious man who is showering in your home and running up your water bill. You just left the faucet on, my guy. Like, there is nobody here. Nobody's making tournaments yet. And I'm not saying that it can't happen, right? Like, all of those things still can come to fruition, but we can't be mad that we're in a grassroots event or going back to a grassroots system and we're having grassroots problems.
Yeah.
Right?
And
this is a grassroots problem. This is not necessarily on the shoulders of Blizzard. It is because we're in the position because of their mistakes in the past, like we always have been. But this is the reality of the situation. We're going to have some holes. It sucks that Korean players are very, very good at the game and they kind of have to just sit out until stage 3. That fucking blows and I feel bad for them. But that's the system that we're in.
Look, and
talk to the TOs. Why aren't they making tournaments for this?
Yeah. And there's only so much that can be, the game can be blamed for. I think there's something to be said about like not being as viewership friendly, blah blah blah. Like, I'm coming around to the idea that yes, the game is a big deal, the medium is a big deal, but come on, like, it is also primarily around the stories that you tell, right? Yep. Like, boxing seemed on its ass until YouTubers started doing it and telling stories with really mediocre performances, but at least there was some, you know, like, kayfabe grievances between the actors, yeah, and therefore telling a story. I think, ironically, and this is now, we're now in this meta situation where we're kind of participating in that, even though I hope I'm being sincere in communicating here, but like this mudslinging between Chris and EXO is part of that thing that I think can be the engine in order to, you know, rebirth the drama that every scene needs in order to be in a compelling entertainment product.
Sure. Yep. I'll add some to that fire, because I don't think it's... Ultimately, it does happen at the individual level, meaning, like, you know, people creating or, you know, stirring the pot a little bit. That definitely helps things. But since the beginning of Overwatch esports, I do not think Blizzard has adequately equipped the broadcast team or has invested any kind of monetary resources into the proper telling of these people.
Okay, here's the thing. It's cheap as shit to make drama.
It is.
So here's the thing. Like,
I'm not asking for drama. I'm just asking for, like, let's get into the stories of, like, some of these players, right? Because all we've ever seen from Blizzard is propagating the brands, the teams, right? Nobody's attached to any of these teams. Want to know why? Because you just paid $6 billion to get them the fuck out, right? We have to be focusing on the individuals. I'm not going to sit in here and harp on the content. That, you know, that was just my little ad there, that, like, I want to see the broadcast bring this up in stage two, like, oh, Chris, like, thanks for coming on the desk, do you hate EXO? Like, let's bring that drama that's happening externally to the broadcast and get people talking about it. That's the only way we're going to have this shit happen. But it doesn't have to be this, like, ooh, edgy drama bullshit. It can be just, like, natural storytelling and injecting that farther into the desk, into the casting. That needs to be integrated into the weave that is Overwatch.
I think that's another thing that, like, I would highlight. I think that's my solution rather than, you know, the... uncoachable, bring the belt, daddy, like, we're going to just get these casters out of here. I think change is possible within humans. You wouldn't believe it, Joe. Like, people can actually improve, or rather, like, go a different round.
There are numbers on a spreadsheet. There are zeros and ones, and if you're not a one, you're getting got. Look, the man's coming.
Look, there's so many, like, self-help guru, like, bullshit phrasings, one of which I used last time when we were on with Chris, but, like, you know, the bear,
the decouplers?
No, the bear outside of the cage, right? Like, that keeps doing Then there's the fleas that only jump as high as the ceiling of their further imposed cage, and even if you take the cage away, they still only jump as high. Oh, right? There is something to be said about, like, the steering wheels getting taken away, or the limitations, and you not realizing that there's no barrier there anymore. Okay? Yeah. And I think this, like, this, there has to be more system shocks. And one of those ways would have been competition between tournament organizers. I don't think WDG and ESL FaceIt are necessarily evenly matched in what they can offer or willing to offer. Mm-hmm. Ironically, WDG, in my opinion, has a more compelling broadcast product, while ESL has a more compelling online platform product, including the ESL FaceIt League, which gets people involved, right? They just have different approaches, but they're not directly competing for attention from the same viewership base. But that's where most of the progress is made. When there's a tournament every other week with two or more parties are trying to one up each other and make the more compelling product, and then eventually one probably has to die because, like, they're not good enough at it. Mm-hmm. And then they, like, or they have to adapt, and therefore the product gets elevated, right? Like in some ways. And we find out something about how, once again, this esports wants to be broadcast, right? And that's to my I don't think it has happened enough just yet in terms of like they're trying to slowly iterate. I've heard about big changes coming down the pike.
Sure,
but,
sure.
Like it's not enough yet. And I think like there's only so much time left. I think like they're realistically people and especially organizations will look at the first Dallas viewership. They will look at the crowdfunding amount. They will look at EWC. We'll look at the attention that Overwatch gets there. We'll look at the prize money that it gets. We'll look at the viewership that it gets. And then they will make educated choices as to be interested in Overwatch as an esports going forward. We do not have much time in order to get those numbers up to even be able to hope that this is going somewhere, right? If anything,
this was
going to
be a formative year. We talked about it. This was going to be the year that we kind of set our trajectory or we nosedive. And so far, it's not the worst, but it's not promising.
Look, like, theoretically, if there was... The problem is well, also not in the era, realistically, where... You know, if we were still in the low interest rate era, then I could see, for instance, someone like Monkey Bubble stepping up and going okay, we got an investor. Maybe we can make a more compelling product because we're endemic. We understand this scene much more. We know what's needed. And based on with that capital, we can compete with the EFGs and the WGGs of this world. It's unfortunately not the case, right?
Nope.
But it has to be scuffed to some degree, okay? Like, a lot of the growth here has to come from private streams, has to come from co-streams, has to come from the banter there, from the drama in the community. The very fabric of this esport and the types of viewers it attracts has to fundamentally change because the polished, localization-loving, American... like sports andies that are not hardcore.
They're out
and they've been out for a while. Okay.
They've been out with Philly.
So like the only thing is really like the biggest hope I have for co-streaming in terms of like that something can summon up there. We've seen that individual content creators can almost single-handedly revive a scene if they're really entertaining and can drag a scene along. Yeah. Like in the way the economy of esports and especially this esport is set up, it almost has to become an endemic phenomenon if it ever wants to rise again. And there's ample of there is solid opportunity for a massive co-streamer to settle here and make bank. Okay, that's like if they have a friendly relationship with the players, they can banter, they can get certain products or maybe a podcast or maybe a catch up like the CDL does after their active matches where you invite the players, they shit talk there, right? Like stuff like this, or innovate, maybe find something that's more Overwatch like and talk about it, right? In some way that is not too nerdy, is not too educational, because I think we're good on an education call. I'm not slighting that. I think it's a great source of
content. It's just one angle. It's just we have such a vacuum in the other.
Now, right? Yeah. Like we have great content creators in that regard. We do not have the shit slingers. We do not have the...
We don't have entertainment andies. We don't have the other side of the coin. Yeah.
And that's where it needs to go. If anything, we lost some, right? Like...
Oh, for sure.
Avast is somewhere else now. Or focusing attention differently, which makes a lot of sense. Bad Patrick Mary, I think, has a bad, by the way, like, hopefully good health soon. Like, wishing definitely a lot to Bad Patrick Mary, huge part of the scene.
Ditto.
I think Avril is doing well. Like, definitely putting in a monstrous effort there. But, yeah, like, I don't know, like, it's an it's we're back to grassroots, like the phenomenon, right, like Hex and ZP, right? Like that's like the 15k individual streams and then upwards. There just has to be some growth vector that's less predictable for this esport in order to have any growth potential past its current point.
It's going to be hard to pinpoint when that happens or who kind of gets the ball moving and starts rolling downhill for that big avalanche of, you know, viewership and then interest on the viewership and, you know, it kind of scaling out of control, right? A minor tangent that a quick, you know, maybe a quick thought for you, and then we'll get back to our little court case. You talk about competition when it comes to the broadcast. You talk about competition when it comes to tournament formatting. Are we kind of speaking around a gigantic elephant in the room? Is it difficult to try to even compete when you have the ESWC kind of just looming at you? Like, is there this pseudo Overwatch League era? Like, why would I even try?
I mean, certainly that's an issue that's sort of impacting everything, but you can raise the stakes. Like, money is not the only thing that people care about.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Yes, it will take a significant attention. It will create this gravity hole of attention always during summer. But like, that's what you got to deal with, right? Like, but you can have the rest of the year. Right, like there's a lot of other Overwatch to be played, and you can build systems around it. Right, you cannot defeat it in any way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's something to be said. I will say, and I think this is my segue into that. The tournament organizers have done changes that try to innovate and have implemented rules that imply a spirit, like the spirit of the rule and the goals of those rules seem to imply a vision for the product that they believe is more appealing to the viewers that we actually have.
Correct.
And I think that's a far more interesting discussion to have than actually the, you know, the practical
nerd rules lawyer fucking gotcha, Andy.
Yes.
Got it. So what's the, when we look at some of these rules, what are they signaling? Like when we talk about, you know, region locking, when we talk about how you can't bring over Korean players, like what are you trying to get at? What's the angle?
So the first, like the region locking was the first major one, by the way.
Right.
Look back in January, I raised this as a formative difference. And at the time, I did not just mean that this very rule would be formative in how it shapes the scenes respectively, but also the implication of what this application of the rule may mean for where Blizzard and its third-party tournament organizers see this esports developing or has a chance to develop. And one of them is regional parity, right? Like one of the guiding principles very early on in the Overwatch League, I think Monty advised on it, is to have no region locking, which is not something that other franchise leagues in esports do. There are region locking rules in League. There are some in Valorant. Like the and these leagues do a lot structural handicapping, kneecapping of the best regions in order to enforce artificial parity in order for regional fans to cope, and in the worst case, in the most cynical case, the best case for regional talent to develop, which is less successful in League of Legends, more successful in Valorant, I would argue. I think that's probably also in part because of it being very early stage. I think in the end you will find a similar polarization as in other esports, specifically because Korea looks locked into Valorant now, second biggest game in PC banks. But yeah, basically, like that is a pattern. I also recognize for OWCS. They want to facilitate the regional rivalry and parity, even if it's faux parity, by only giving Korea two slots, right? That's a deliberate action. Sorry, it's not even Korea, it's Asia, right? Like, that seems to be a deliberate decision. You could argue maybe they wanted to leave the door open for China to introduce some slots, and suddenly, like, I don't know, they also give two slots, and then people go like, oh, Asia has four slots in total, blah, blah, why? Whatever it is, whatever reason there is, they, once again, we're getting back to money. You could have not had more teams there than eight. So you had to make the decision, and of course, you kneecap the region that destroys your goal for parity the most, at least as implied by what I'm reading into these rules, right? So they want regional parity. They want the EU versus NA narrative. They want eventually, hopefully, to have a chance to tell a different story then. And the Korean World Championship winning team is X, Y, and Z. They want to facilitate this because it's a vehicle that, unfortunately, and I'll tell you straight up, viewers, you have signed off for the longest time, including Overwatch League. Right? You can be, oh, I like to watch the best players play in the world. Nope. I hear a lot of people say that. I'm the only one in the room. I'm the train conductor, and I look at my fucking, like, income, and I see I'm fucking broke, okay? You're all talking, yeah, I will show up, and then I'm alone on my little train, okay?
You don't give a fuck about natural, that. That's the natural fallacy that I think Overwatch has, like, just has a myriad of it, just a ton of it in it, is that you have such a vocal minority of people who probably do, but who you're talking to is the viewers that don't.
I don't believe
it. Are not interested.
I mean, it's a possibility. That's the less cynical. I'm, once again, Eric, you already know.
I think there's definitely a percentage of those people who just don't, who say all that good shit. They talk all the stuff and they make balloon names,
lie.
Right? Like,
they lie. 100%. They falsify their preferences.
They do. The smoking gun here is the fact that people have stopped being interested because there is no illusion of hope. There's no, like, oh, my region. There's no, it's just Korea. And me personally, I'm okay with that. I want to see good games. I don't really care. But the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of esports viewers, this product is not interesting to them. And we can only imagine as to why that might be. Could it be the fact that our content sucks? Maybe. Could it be that they can't necessarily relate? I don't know. But something has to change, right? And this is the thing that they've attacked.
I will, yes. And, like, you already feel, like, kind of like the aura, the energy of the moment is that everyone's already, like, high on the copium. I'm going, like, Korean coaches are actually not good. I agree, actually, with that take, that in the very specific sense that they do not innovate. That's true, right? Like, that's fair, there's something there. I still am very much of the opinion that probably the top five in, or top four, at least, in Korea, which each, if you put them each in either, probably more EMEA, but also
NA,
I think they had a definitely have a chance to win that. I think WAC is probably the best team in the world right now.
Yeah, WAC, and I would say top two. I would agree, hard agree with top two. Everybody else, I'm pretty sus of. I think
for the game, I feel like for the game, I was probably FTG's on level with Toronto and Twisted Mind.
It could be close. That's I would agree with that. It could be a close game, and it would be, you know, it would be a style thing. And I think that's, like, top four is reaching. Like, I don't think Yeti's actually that good.
So I think, like, yes, you want to enforce regional parity, even if it's a complete sham lie cope.
Yeah, like, because people like it. People shenanigans,
bullshit. Like,
hoodwinked.
It's one reliable narrative that in esports that works in esports. It's especially the EU versus NA narrative, and however you can discern and create your little pocket of that. And the more competitive it is, it just seems to be the very easy win that you can you know, distill
that's money
into
on
drama
the table.
That works in some way, right?
Yep.
Now, that's another underlying, like, you see that as implied by a lot of the rules, right? The transfers, the things, the region lock certainly is one thing, right? Like, the two slots only for Asia. Like, there's structural decisions made that point towards the goal of enforcing regional parity. That seems to be, like, one of the goals. Like, someone sits down and goes, okay, what do I want to create? What will possibly facilitate growth for this esport? And one of them is regional parity. Okay? I think that's expressed by the roles. Now, there's another one that's, I think, is a little bit more subtle. And I think also because it actually, in all actual fact, does not work in many of the ways, especially in the AFG leagues, is team continuity. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So a continuity of identity for fans to attach in a world where there's no rigid teams, contracts, brands, locations. You want to enforce or bring a stability with rules that force some team continuity.
So now, to quickly make that very clear to an audio listener, the rule in question that you're talking about within regards to team continuity is the idea that there has to be like a core of three people of the team to hold the circuit points. Is that correct?
No, it's actually a little bit more complex. But circuit points, as a rule, are an expression of the desire to have team continuity, right?
Okay, cool. Got it.
So, because there's a rule where, like, let me give a practical example, right? So M80 won points. I'm not specifically sure. I could look it up, but
I'll look it up.
Let's say they got 25 points per player.
Yeah,
they actually got 25 points per player. Yes, very good.
Yep.
So they got 25 points per player. And now two players have left. Okay?
Yep.
So we do the math. We're back to two players have left. We have five players.
25 points per player.
25 points. So we had 75. Because they have three players, right?
Yeah.
I think... am I doing the math wrong? Let me...
There's substitutes. And they didn't get full points, right? If they didn't play all the matches.
Yeah, but that's not the point. Like, I'm trying to figure out why it's not 25 points, because who did they add? They added Liar, who has 15 points, and in my estimation it would land on 90, so I'm missing 15 points from elsewhere.
I have it on the screen, or if you...
Oh, they got 30 points. That makes sense. Wait. Oh, of course. I went at 50.
Brother,
please, brother. It's 1 a.m. here, okay? And I already only slept last 3 hours last.
We'll get you out of here, I promise.
We're at 3 times 30, 90 plus 15 for Flyers, 105, okay?
Yep.
And those points in aggregation qualify for Dallas for whoever did not win stage 2.
Right. Yep.
So, more so, the points escalate, and heavily. The points for stage 2 are twice as large. Okay? So instead of 250 points for winning them, that to define God, you now get 500 points. Okay? And if you do the math, it effectively lands on, like, stage 1 does not matter, really. Effectively, especially in the expressions, how it worked out now. So, for instance, can you go back to the points, Eric, or point overview of teams? So, I don't know why they put them together. That's really weird, but whatever. Like, because EMEA and NA do not compete against each other, right? Like, it's inter-regionally. But, okay, so... Wait, oh, you are on Europe. I'm stupid.
Audio listeners, he's actively smoking Beppis on screen.
Guys,
you're missing out.
It's 1 a.m., please. You were on NA earlier. Yes, okay, here we go. Okay, so currently, MAT was the third place team. They fell because they got rid of two players and picked up one player. So they're now, Luminosity Gaming is at 125 points. MAT is at 105 points. Now keep in mind, that's a 20-point difference. But, here's the big but. The difference between the second and the third slot, for instance, is 20 points per player for stage two. That means if MAT finishes above Luminosity Gaming, let's say Luminosity Gaming gets third and MAT gets second, that is 100 points across the team. Therefore, they already have beaten the score despite being far behind, right? So the 100-point difference per placement is so severe, it's almost like the entirety of points given to MAT for the entire first stage, right? So effectively, for now, it doesn't matter. I'm still glad the propaganda has worked to a degree where it's been talked about, because it will become an issue by stage three when the aggregation works much more heavily, right?
Yeah.
Now, okay. Here we juice it a little, Joe. Okay.
Oh.
So
ending juice.
There is a stipulation in the rules that's really strange. Okay.
Okay.
Let's establish first the first rule. Had MAT with three players from their core roster picked up someone from Toronto Defiant, or indeed picked up two players from Toronto Defiant, right? So okay. MAT had 30 points per player, a total of 150 points. Now, if they were to pick up two players from Toronto Defiant, those two players, because they get 50 each, would give them 100 points, correct? 100 points on top of the 90 that they had, so they would now be at 190 points per player.
Net of
right?
40 points, yeah.
But that is not allowed by the rules, because the rules state that there's a threshold for the core to be beholden by the actual finishing maximum threshold that they could have gotten points. Here, MAT cannot get more than 150 points, no matter who they pick up. Okay?
Okay.
So, like, if MAT picks up two Defiant players, it does not matter. They're capped at 150 points. They do not get the 190 points. Okay?
Yep.
Here's the weird part.
Okay.
When a squad only, like, even if a team decides to only retain two of its roster, core roster slots.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have the relevant rule outlined somewhere? Can probably find, I think it's worth it, so just so people can read it. It is the 7.6.1.1 rule. These stipulations will apply only to a team who retained three core roster players from stage one or stage three. Teams who retain less core roster players than this threshold will have no restrictions placed on their circuit points as it relates to live event qualification. Now, this is crazy, right? Because that means there could be a team that takes two Defiant players, two Timeless players. We're doing the math. 100 points by Defiant. The Timeless players each contribute 40. We're now at 180. And then you can take one Luminosity player, right, who commits 25 points, I believe. So we're at 205. Okay. That's more than M80. That's more than Luminosity. That is even more than Timeless. And it is more than Defiant. Because, like, we stole from the Defiant, we stole from Timeless. Okay.
Yep.
That loophole is crazy and needs to be fucking killed. The fact that I can destroy a core and just, like, pizzle puzzle, once again, it won't happen here because the roster lock is imminent. But for stage three, for people in the back rooms to sit there 5 minutes before roster lock and go, we have two pieces.
Yeah.
Like, of course, there are contracts in place, but theoretically, there are other organizations where that isn't the case, where they can puzzle together the ideal point percentage and not be beholden by the organization or by the team's threshold is fucking crazy, okay? There's crazy potential for shenanigans. And I'll give you one more, even though it does not really matter for this stage. This is, in fact, a strategy that one team is currently exploring. They might split up in two. Okay, they might do mitosis in order to maximize points. It's crazy out here. Okay, And
I mean, again, if you're going to give the rules and I mean, allow them in the public square, you should be listening to this kind of feedback. But also, I don't hate teams trying to maximize their chances of succeeding. This is allowed per the rules.
I feel like this is, brother, like, if that shit goes down, you better all be recording your Discord calls, okay? I want to see that Game of Thrones shit, okay? I want to report to the, like,
that'd be good, yeah.
Just leak that shit. Just stream it, okay? When you, and by the way, guys, I'm actually with, I don't know, M80 now, and, like, your points are now not qualifying you for Stockholm. Do that shit, okay? That's content. No, actually, what should be done is, please kill that rule, like, in the mid-season. I think that's the most apt point, because, like, that's crazy. And I think, like, the rule makes some sense if you think there are contracts in place and there's enough organizational interest. A lot of these rules do. But, brother, I just, like, I told you, or I thought that you guys were into team continuity, and now you have a rule that actively facilitates the exact opposite. Because, once again, like, WGG has team continuity. They lock that shit up for an entire stage. You cannot leave for the half the season of the year, okay? That's continuity enforced. And they do the same stuff for the second, right? Like, as soon as stage two starts, that's the team you're playing Dallas with. Stockholm with. Okay. Sorry, not as it starts. I think as the upper, as the qualification is finished. I think that's when it locks. And then I think I would have to look at again when the roster signing windows open. Maybe I'm chatting shit. But like, there's more continuity given here than by the circuit points. And indeed, the circuit points, if anything, invite backstabbing rather than provide that continuity. And I feel like I'm looking at all your little social media channels from the EFG crowd, and you're like communicating that this is intended to foster some sticking together and figuring it out and improving over the year, and that system does not do that. The only way you do that is incentivizing it in another way or locking that shit up for significant amounts of time. And I also don't think you can necessarily expect contracts to fix or new organizations coming in to fix your problem for you. You probably got to become active in the midseason in order to fix that big loophole. Or by stage three, this will be a fucking red wedding, my guy. Like, we're slitting throats. We're like, somehow Seeker's getting fucked, even though the guy cannot even accrue points because he's on shit teams, then he's the best player once again in. Like, it's going to be great cinema. It's also going to be shit competition. once again, you're also somehow hurting your goal for parity, because as, once again, especially North American region, but increasingly so also the European region, backstabs the fuck out of each other because they're like spineless snakes. The Korean region has roster locks and post, therefore they cannot do that. They have continuity, and therefore they will beat your goal of parity, therefore defeating both intended goals that you're expressing implicitly by having unaligned rules to that goal, right? Goddamn.
It's a rat race out here. And ideally, like you said, we are protected by contracts. Luckily, at least the West thus far has enough organizational interest that it's very difficult to foresee this happening. However, in a resource plentiful world, is there not room for that to be... basically, what I'm asking is, are we ultimately saved by the impending roster lock? What the thought experiment that I'm playing out is, let's say, for instance, M80 unironically wins the lottery. They just fall. They have some crazy windfall. They sell all their Dogecoin, and they just have a plethora of resources to spend. They have fuck you money, right? They then don't need to necessarily abide by contracts because they're more than willing to pay out buyouts. So they can unironically just money bags the ultimate puzzle and Exodia their way to a LAN, right? That can't happen right now because of the roster lock, correct?
Sorry,
the Western roster lock that's coming up very quickly, correct? Am I wrong in that?
They cannot avoid what? Sorry?
If let's say, again, hypothetically, let's say M80 gets a buttload of money, just unironically blank checks, and they are willing to pay the buyouts of the top teams to kind of 2+2+2+1.
Yeah.
Or 2+2+1.
Yeah.
A team together to Exodia their way to the top.
Yeah.
Would that be possible? Yes, or is it limited by the roster lock?
I don't see any reason why that should not be possible after stage three, between stage three and stage four. I don't think there's any rule that would avoid that. I think there are some clauses where they leave themselves some rule. By the way, like Joe already clairvoyant. Like we were talking, we were like nerging about that. It, like look at the date, right? Like it's in January when that was announced. Yes, I don't believe that there's anything that holds that back. I don't even know.
I mean, it's not like feasible. I'm not expecting any of these teams to get some sort of like crazy cash injections anytime soon. But possibility is still there for maybe
organization if it's only
to
cash
alter, right?
Let's say the number one team in ranking points just thinks like, oh fuck, this meta is really not like we're going to suck in this meta. But you know, it's not going to suck. These two dive players. That are actually really like XYZ tank and like XYZ flex DPS.
Yes. Sure.
I'm a good support backline. Maybe I want to play with these guys. So not only am I going to like win, and of course, like it might be that they are in a contract, but let's say they are not. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the only
thing. Then I think it's completely chaotic. Then you have like the, didn't this just recently happen? Like not maybe within the last 2 years in collegiate where I think there was like a very prominent support duo who were just like, oops, sorry guys, we're going to go play with these guys.
I think it was contenders, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Sure. Whatever it was. Right. Like I think that's, again, it's not out of the realm of possibility at this point. It's grassroots guys. These players have to look out for themselves. They have to look out for their best interests. This is going to happen. The fact that we do have contractual obligation kind of protects from that. But in a very real reality where the esports winter gets a little colder and some of these teams get pressured out and those contracts get either bought out by the organization or just completely terminated.
Especially
some fuckery.
Keep in mind, this is after Esports World Cup. There's much less incentive now for you to sponsor an Overwatch team. Unless the viewership picked up significantly, right?
Yep.
Or something else is announced indeed, right? Like, we don't know.
Sure.
So, like, that's something that you have to consider in terms of the interest of organizations to pay relatively okay salaries down the line. It also, by that time, we probably have a pretty good idea how much Blizzard wants to put in to the esports in terms of kind of digital items are they offering for the crowdfunding and that type of stuff, right? Like, and you have to align your rules based on those expectations in some sense. But yeah, there's absolutely a possibility for fuckery here. Where, like, not, keep in mind, you're not just blowing up the points.
You're actively stripping points away. They have to come from a team.
Yes, and because it's a relative system, you're now taking away from your former teammates, and you might be constructing a team that is much more potent in a meta that might have previously not been as good, and you could have just farmed Rush until the cows came home, and then it switches to Rush to Dive, and now you want the best teammates in the world on Dive, right, instead. So, yeah, this is not my favorite rule. And especially the uncapping is... Let me think about this. Is there any reason to even have that in? Because I think it's hard to delineate
how else you would delineate the threshold. I think I would probably just hold those two players to their old threshold.
Yeah.
Or have some formula by which they add weight to the overall aggregation in order to artificially make this less potent. Maybe I would even add some continuity bonus, possibly.
Like, I feel like the only thing that you could tempt people with in regards to that is additional circuit points. I really don't expect Blizzard to be, like, offering stipends to teams who are willing to stay together. I feel like that's
it's more like more points, you know?
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Would you be like, is that, does the math check out there? That would be my concern. Like, how much are we talking?
Or
does that fuck with the math?
Once you lock into, it's also a hard ask. Once you lock into stage one, you're locked to your core of three. It's kind of rough.
I mean, I think that, again, it serves the purpose of continuity. It serves the purpose of making these...
True, yeah.
You know, that is the... Again, I agree with you to you know, step out into the opinion square. I do think that all of these rules do point towards, like, a clear path that EFG is trying to craft Overwatch towards, right? Like, it is very clearly communicating that they would like fewer Korean players. They would like the same faces to show up week by week, and we don't just have a completely grassroots, like, you know, everybody's changing constantly. I've been there. I've seen that esport. It's hard to watch. It's very difficult to keep up with. Ultimately, I think the biggest solutions are, like you're saying, locking teams into a core of three and, you know, making guaranteed commitments to those players, or finding some sort of crossover when it comes to the roster lock dates that you can you can kind of stop this potential fuckery from happening, is because there is a roster lock already in place. So you would need to have done that with such a low amount of time, some dates, right? I feel like it's a date question, or it's a question of forcing teams to be committed, right?
The question is also, do you need team continuity in order to have a compelling product? Or can you just have...
I don't think you do, but...
Can you just have big names players? Now, of course, that's not inherently attractive to organizers, so maybe there is something to... Yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't hate the idea that we're focusing on the stories of individuals, but that, like, that's not communicated by the context of the rest of the rules. The rest of the rules point to a very clear, like, we're trying to make a very stable system that organizers can get into and fans can kind of grow alongside with us, and they can approach this product, see similar names, maybe not the same names every week, but similar names, to have a sense of familiarity. And they're not necessarily caught completely off guard, and they can kind of be, I hate to use the word, but immersed in the competition and the drama and the entertainment of it. It's very difficult to be entertained, and it's difficult to also tell a story when the names that are even at the highest level of competition are completely different week by week, and they're playing alongside completely different people week by week, right? Very difficult to kind of keep a tab on all of the crazy roster mania that would happen if we did not, thankfully, have a lot of teams already have their rosters under contract, lock and key, right? It's difficult to fuck with that because nobody's buying players out right now. Like, a prime example is what happened with EXO and ENSA, right? ENSA really doesn't even purchase, like, just throws a little bit of money at Chase. Chase comes over, has to look out for himself. Now EXO is... you know, limited in some ways, and ENSA gets some kind of a buff, mostly just limiting EXO, right?
Yep.
That would happen week by week with any team with any kind of resources. They would just be actually hiring mercenaries to make it to a LAN. Mm-hmm. That's difficult to kind of sell both the viewership and other organizers to try to buy into.
Once again, like, this becomes a non-issue as investment into the ecosphere increases and you have more teams, but
More places to compete. Right?
Ironically, like, you solve this by Blizzard signaling that there's a large interest for them to align incentive structures with teams by providing a reasonable or even generous investment or time investment into the creation of digital assets or items to be crowdfunded and revenue shared with organizations, which seems to be the way that other scenes, such as Counter-Strike, such as the League of Legends scenes, seem to go, right? Like, I think just the idea, like, you do not even have to necessarily represent the numbers to, like, it doesn't have to be huge just yet, but just, like, to have the carrot on the stick
that
you committed to something like this down the line. But maybe not. Maybe Blizzard does not have these ideas at all, and they are totally fine to have this be a tournament or, like, a circuit where just, like, a couple of Overwatch streamers play against each other, and that's as far as the entertainment goes, right? But I feel like you should probably give it one good shot for 1 year and really pump in and see if the competitive scene can generate some revenue return for you and your game, especially if you are having trouble selling skins at this point, and see if there's value in the esports scene. And then, well, it's also on the esports scene to create the content, to do the compelling storylines. I think, and think about this how you want, but there are some artificial stages created by the tournament organizers that are present currently in the scene that will give some eyes on Overwatch just by virtue of where they will be appearing. And if that opportunity is not used, well, then next year we're going to sit here and, like, nobody's going to get money. It's not going to, like, it's legitimately then not even worth calling it a tier 3 esport anymore, right?
100%. And I think you kind of used the ultimate, penultimate kind of terminology that we just don't have right now, or have any kind of agency of control over, is that carrot on the stick, right? We don't have endemically anything to, from the developer's perspective, to entice organizations with. We have nothing at all. I think even the commitment, the verbal and public optic commitment to creating that in the future, with details being announced at a later date, I think that would be such a huge boon that all of those talks that maybe have fallen through with teams, I'm going to reference the episode that we just did with Christopher last week. Somebody like a Fnatic maybe probably approaches the table again and goes, okay, well, they said that they're doing skins. Maybe we can hit a contact up and find out a little bit more details on what that program actually looks like. And that's already a step in the right direction, right? It doesn't even have to be, we need skins tomorrow and we need to see what they look like. It could be as simple as probably a verbal commitment to doing it. I think that would be such an increase in those discussions starting back up, or maybe even somebody pulling the trigger on it, right? Because all we have really right now is the World Cup. Can we get to the World Cup? Yes or no? Because nothing else is happening. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. You need teams. You need some of these orgs. You need the players, ultimately, to be making the content, to be undeniable, so that they are picked up on their own merit and not the merit of a developer. You don't want to be beholden to the developer to, you know, oh, I need stickers to have a career. That can't be it. Right, you either have to be good or you have to be funny or entertaining, and somehow, ideally, you're both. Right, pick a lane. Everybody's got to be in it.
It also got me thinking, like, didn't we say a while ago that BlizzCon information should have come out by now?
I don't know if BlizzCon's happening again.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, the fact that we have not heard anything, is that...
I don't think that it's happening. I haven't heard any kind of, like, public confirmation, but I would put money on the fact that that's not happening again. I think that's just mostly... I think that's been a loss leader, and they can't afford it. There's been silly amounts of money. I would be interested to see the logistics and like the cost benefit of running a convention like that. I just don't know that it's worth doing a public convention when that could all probably be done online and for a fraction of the cost. I'm sad that that wouldn't be the case. I'm sad that there isn't like a destination for all these games to congregate to. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, games industry is kind of crunching right now, and you know, money's tight.
I mean,
I would place a bet it's not happening.
I think like if anything, that like would be a question around, you know, the around the acquisition, right? Like maybe there's something for Microsoft at large that this would be rolled into or something. I'm not sure. I also don't know if there would even be like games coming up that they could be announcing, but it would be a weird thing to revive BlizzCon for 2023 and then not come back for 2024 as well.
I'm not
skeptical yet, but like I feel like we talked about in a month ago or so that we should be getting information soon, and then we have not gotten any yet. So,
RIP.
Maybe it's a little weird. We'll see. But like, of course, like depending on BlizzCon, considering we haven't seen anything, feels like the World Cup. Like the Overwatch World Cup,
yeah,
is probably also dead, right? Like, otherwise we would.
That one, I'm open to like coping a little bit. That you don't just because I believe, and again, that's my opinion, that I believe that BlizzCon is probably dead in the water. That doesn't necessarily mean that the Overwatch World Cup, has to follow suit. I'm not so sure. I think there's a world where that can still take place. And just not have, you know, such a huge stage. It was kind of already the case within BlizzCon that it was like moved off one of the main stages. It was still a nice little spectacle. I got to see a couple matches last year. But it was moved off stage or off one of the main stages. I don't think the
you're not afraid
the
of nobody
scuttling of BlizzCon necessarily spells demise for the Overwatch World Cup. However, I do think that it reduces the confidence that it'll take place. I would agree with that. I don't think it's tied to, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Fucking hell. Someone linked me an Andrew Schultz clip and it just played. Okay, I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna get you back. Okay.
All right. I think that's a rough enough idea of what's been happening, why the rules actually matter, why this is actually a weird win for Blizzard now that they've actually put out the rules and yep. Can kind of actually they're actively getting feedback from people. Whether or not they're taking it, you know, remains to be seen.
Sure.
But this is a prime example, this case study of EXO and Twisted Minds versus the OWCS and or the public is a prime example that you do need rules public. You do need a rule book to be adhered to. Because sometimes not even the people in-house that you've hired can get it fucking right. We know the GMs won't get it right. We know that apparently admins won't get it right. And this isn't the first time this has happened. This has happened in contenders in the past. Shoutouts to the real ones who went on strike. You know, this is the reason why we've been so rule book pilled.
Mm-hmm.
For years, right? I think this is the ultimate like prime case example and why we were so happy, why there's a dedicated channel to nerd out on the rules to make sure that nobody's fucking around.
No.
It's a win. This is a win.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Ultimately, it's a good thing that this has happened because it only cements the opinion that rules should be public, because you will always have some weird nerd community pick them apart and find examples that you can kind of synthesize for feedback, right?
Yeah.
Big win. Love it. It's a very odd discussion. I'm a little weirded out on how some of these teams are spinning this, but a discussion nonetheless. And I think it was ultimately hopefully interesting. If you did like this, obviously, do all the influencer stuff. That being said, that's 338. Yiska, what? I know we talked to Vega finally. That was great. Love that for you.
Nice.
Anything else?
I'm cooking something up. I don't have anything to report yet, but maybe a new show format for GG Recon.
Okay. I do want to shout out specifically GG Recon. Am I wrong in seeing that you guys made a game Wordle?
Yes, we did. Like, for games, basically.
Name the game,
yep.
Right?
Yeah. I suck at it so hard. It's crazy.
Dude, I clicked on it and was like, I am not going to try this. This is difficult. So if you're up for the challenge, check it out.
Brother, I'm so lost as a gamer. I barely am. Like, I'm really just so esports. Yeah. Like, I have never played a Fallout. I've never played a Red Dead Redemption. For the longest time, before I got my PS5, I had never played an Uncharted. I have not played a Last of Us.
An Uncharted. Like, yeah, same.
I just never played, like, the big franchise. My last Pokemon is, like, fucking Pokemon Blue.
Oh wow. Okay, that's a little surprising. But
other than fair. Pokemon Go, but yeah. Like,
yeah, it's not a like main.
And when like someone's like, "Okay, which action RPG happened in 2017?" I'm like, "Yeah, I still played Overwatch, bro." Like
2017 is that Diablo 3? Maybe? At ARPG?
Nah,
I guess.
Diablo 3 was way earlier. Not like,
was it?
2000. Let me think. It would be.
Yeah, no. Now that I'm thinking about like
12, maybe.
Could Diablo be. 3. Could be definitely that old. I'm trying to remember the discourse around the Real Money Auction House.
May 15, 2012.
Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's wild. It does not feel that old, but yeah, I guess it is.
And then Reaper of Souls came in 2014. Crazy shit.
Actually crazy shit. Yeah, that's...
Time flies.
It do. It fucking do. All right. That's the episode. We love you. Next week, we will come back and not be complete nerds, or we'll still be nerds, and we'll just nerd out on something else. This is your weekly nerd podcast. What's the other... What's the hype new thing that kids are saying? What are the zoomers? What are the chatters chatting about? What are they yapping about? Oh, that's there you go. They're yappers. They're yapping. Yep. That's what all the TikTokers are.
I can't respond to you. I'm currently mewing.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Face Max. We'll see you later. Get off Reddit, kids.
Get a beard.